Okay, good morning and welcome to ITE 1 Module 10. Wow, my, how time flies when you're having fun, eh? So, today we're going to be talking about communication in the workforce, or in the workplace, I should say. And although everybody goes groan, it is in your exam, so we all sort of go through it. And we got a little bit of fun going to happen today with that, we think. So we'll try and make it as interesting as possible.
I was just going to say that while everybody does go groan, and everybody complains, unfortunately, communication skills are a keystone as far as your interaction with others in the workplace, and your ability to communicate will govern whether you are able to retain and keep your jobs. And for example, I'm sure if we asked Chantelle whether she thought communication was valuable at her jobs with HumanWare, she'd be nodding right now, or possibly typing something into chat saying that yes, it was. And I mean, Geraldine will tell you that communication is important, and I'll tell you, and you'll all ignore us and go, yeah, whatever. And then you'll find that, you know, 2 days into your new job, communication will be highly important. So pay attention to this lecture. It's a good one. We'll try and make sure that people understand that communication skills are important. Well, I mean, for example, Scott, do you find you have to communicate with your clients when working for TNT? Exactly. Oh, I've got Ali over here getting a pat. That's Peter's guide dog. Sorry, let's get on with the lecture.
You better not tell Topaz or she'll be over there. Okay, all right, so let's start with a bit of a rendition of last week's quiz, an overview of last week's lesson via the quiz. So chat window's open, and can you tell me, question one, what characteristics is there of a DDoS attack, or DDoS attack, however you want to say it? Is it A, many hosts participating in a coordinated attack, B, it only takes a short time to set up, C, home computers with internet connections are not susceptible, or D, it's easy to determine the intent of a packet? And you can go now.
Yeah, we've got one answer.
Yes, yeah, one answer.
Is anybody else not in the chat window? Anybody else got an answer for question one? This quiz is for you guys, not for us. We don't, you know, like, this is for you. And if we hear any complaints from you when the final exam's on, and you go, I didn't know all the answers, we're going to say, well, we did quizzes, so, nah. I mean, that's about as aggressive as I can be on that. Has anybody else got an answer for question one? Was anybody listening to question one?
Somebody was. Grace was.
Of course Grace was. Grace is a model student, and
oh, well. Test?
Yeah, that's better. Test? No, that's okay.
Yep.
Well, look, I mean, we thank you. There we go. Yes, we've got another answer. That's, all right.
We have three. Oh, two, yeah. Okay, well, yes. Yes, thank you. Good. We have three answers. That's good. Okay, yes, and it was option A, which was the DDoS attack, is when you've got many hosts in a coordinated attack. Okay.
Do you need to move a little bit closer to that microphone? Back again? Or is it...
I've just got to just...
That's better.
Okay, how's that?
That's good.
Okay. Okay. I'd like yes-no answers here of these options, which are physical threats. All right, so we have A, laptops stored in an unlocked cabinet. B, antivirus software without... Oh, sorry, yes, no to that one. Laptop stored in an unlocked cabinet. Is that a physical threat?
Yes.
Excellent. Yes, it is. That's right. Okay.
Yes.
Right. Option B, antivirus software with outdated virus definitions. Is that a physical threat?
Mm.
That's right, it isn't, no.
No, it is not a physical threat. I'm not going to identify you. It's because it is talking about software.
That's correct, yeah. All right. Users using one generic username and password to connect to the network. Is that a physical threat? And that's correct, it is. It is, it's a no. Not a physical threat.
And you could argue that it was a physical threat because it involved somebody physically logging onto a workstation, and I'm sure there are students all over the place that do argue that, but the answer that they want is no.
Okay, the next one. The network server and network equipment are kept in the corner of the office for easy access. Is that a physical threat?
Just like our training room.
That's correct. Yes, it is. Yes. Good one. Okay. Next question. Which type of security threat installs to a computer without the user's knowledge and then monitors all the computer activity? Is it A, adware, B, greyware, C, malware, or D, spyware? D is correct. it's spyware. Okay, which type of security threat uses email that appears to be from a legitimate sender and asks the recipient to visit a website to enter confidential information? Is it A, badware, B, phishing, C, stealth virus, or D, worm? That's correct. It is B, phishing.
Spelt okay. With a PH. Well, if you're reading that with JAWS, you wouldn't actually know unless you sort of went back
no,
and spelled
that's right.
it.
Yeah.
Unless you've got a Braille display, and I don't think most of the people on here have got Braille displays. Grace has got a Braille display. Who else has got... Oh, Scott's got a Braille display. Who else has got a Braille display? Well, you'll survive Discovery 2. No, just kidding. But no, it will help be very helpful in Discovery 2.
Actually, they are really helpful when you're doing your exams, too, to have them set up. When you start getting a lot of IP addresses or other type network information, it's very good to have a Braille display to read it.
Of course, we would like to point...
If you're a Braille reader, of course.
yeah. We would like to point out here that a Braille display is not required. It's just very handy.
No, it is handy, yeah. Okay, next question. We have a technician attempting to secure a wireless network. Okay, what two options should be performed to secure access to the network? So we want two answers here. A, change the default administrator password for all access points. B, install a security appliance to stop all wireless traffic. C, enable the broadcasting of the SSID for only one access point. D, use MAC filtering. Or E, use the default SSID value for the access points.
Two answers. You better brush your teeth after all these cyber lollipops, Grace. You're correct.
Yeah, you're all correct there. That's the changing the default administrator password for all the access points, which was A, and D, which was using MAC filtering. Well done.
Has anybody noticed... Sorry, I'm just going to digress here for a couple of seconds. Has anybody noticed how infuriatingly annoying it is with Linksys access points, how the default is no username and then admin is the password, and it actually stops you from saving your passwords in Internet Explorer? That is really annoying. I know you shouldn't be saving your passwords for your access points, and you should be using something like KeePass Password Safe, which can be found on www.keypass.info, but when we all get lazy and save the password anyway, it's certainly something to be aware of.
Or just memorize your access point passwords.
Well, you can memorize your access point passwords, but when you've got as much network equipment as I have and work on about 10 external sites, memorizing your passwords becomes a bit of a problem when there's like 15 of the things.
Oh, that didn't work.
What were you trying to do? We're having sensitivity issues here.
I'm oversensitive. Something like that. I might just take it up a tad. Sorry.
While you're waiting, why don't you consider revising a module that you haven't thought about for a couple of weeks? That's right, not only will this increase your ability to pass the tests and give you higher marks, but reading back over your previous notes is a great way to get stuff stuck in your head. ITE, it's not just a course, it's a lifestyle. Results may vary. You may not actually attain a certification, and certificates may not be forthcoming. Limited one per student.
Oh, dear. All right. Thank you, Kerry. All right. A technician... A technician has configured the wireless network with web encryption. Several users were able to use the wireless network and are now unable to connect to the access point. What is the probable cause for the connection problem? A. WEP is a strong encryption technique that requires a successful handshake to establish connectivity. Or B. The access point can't broadcast the SSIDs when WEP is enabled. C. The users have not configured their computers for WEP encryption. Or D. The access point uses 64-bit encryption, which is obsolete with newer wireless network interface cards. Just say CC. That's it. Correct. You are correct. They've not configured their computers for WEP encryption. Well done.
Interestingly enough, there we go. One of our long-time students who we haven't seen for a while. Can you move him down, Sue? That's okay. One of the things that a lot of people have often asked me about, well, obviously not you guys, but and good morning, Suman, who's now been moved into the lecture theatre, so don't move yourself, there's a thing on a lot of access points that say whether the authentication is open or shared. Has anybody seen that? Anybody know what it means?
Yeah, I might.
You can have a go at it. We won't take you out the back and shoot you if you get it wrong, we promise.
Oh, that's good to hear. I wouldn't answer if you were planning on doing that, because I'm probably going to get it wrong. I think the open key is for the WEP is where you can actually type in just one access key, and the shared one you have to use like a USB. Isn't that right?
No, but it's okay. You are safe. And we will not be upset or annoyed. The difference between open and shared authentication is if you... there are two stages to getting onto a wireless network. The first one is associating, and the second one is authenticating. And if you have an open key, you can associate, but you can't authenticate. But if you have a shared key, you actually need to provide the web key to even associate, and then you need to provide it again to authenticate. Anybody got any questions on that?
Yeah. When you're doing it, what's the difference in the actual process if you have an open versus a shared key? Or does everybody just have open keys pretty much?
Most people have open keys. The fact is that if you do have a shared key and you haven't actually told all the computers that it's a shared key, the ones who've got theirs set to open won't actually be able to get onto the access point because they won't know to provide the credentials at association time.
And good morning, Suman.
Yes. Oh, I just want to point out to everybody, and thank you for I think it was actually Suman who replied to us. Thank you for explaining that the lectures are now a little bit late for you guys, and what we would like is if at all possible you guys could attend the first part of lecture, where possible. We do understand it's a bit of a problem, but we can't actually start the lectures any earlier because they won't let us into the building early enough. So we're really sorry about that, but we're really glad that you guys filled us in on what was going on.
Absolutely. Okay, next question. Was that all sorted? Grace, anything else you needed to ask? Okay, no problem. Okay. All right, next question. Which step should a technician perform, and we're going to be talking a lot about this today, when troubleshooting security issues? Would you A, gather... This is the first step, sorry. Would you A, gather data from the customer? B... that should have been, A should have been, gather data from the computer. B, gather data from the customer. C, evaluate the problem. Or D, verify the obvious issues. First step. Okay, that's good. Yeah, you would B, gather data from the customer. You can't go on and evaluate it until you've actually got the problem sorted with your customer and have verified what's, or talked about what's happening. Okay, last question. Which protocol was designed to provide security for WAP devices and efficiently uses bandwidth? Is it SEC TLS, that's A, B, TCP SEC, C, TTL, D, WTCP, or E, WTLS? Okay, and the correct answer, for those that got it, is E, WTLS. Bit of confusion there on that one. Okay, so that's the protocol for WAP devices.
Yeah, this is interesting. Grace has brought up an interesting point. These notes say that the first thing you should do is gather the data from the customer, which I would agree with. However, according to Grace's reading of the discovery notes, I think she's going for Square of the Year. I'll have to let Nancy know that her title is under threat. that it actually says determine the extent of the problem.
Yeah, because what's going on with the discovery is that the customer will call you and issue a report. So you've gotten the report, and then you have to verify the severity and extent of the problem, and if there is one, before you go talk to the customer.
No, because the customer's already talked to you. In fact, that's the first thing that's happened. The first thing is your phone rang, and the customer started talking at you. And
saying, I've got a problem here.
and that is actually...
Yes, but you go and verify it, and then you go back and talk to them more about the problem and gather the information. You just say, okay, there's a problem, and you go check it, and then you go gather more information to solve it from the customer. That's what it said. Okay.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that as far as IT is concerned, as soon as the customer has called you, you have already started gathering information. So as soon as that call comes in, you've got your help desk form open, and you've even logged the fact that they have actually... Yeah, so you have to log the original information when they call you for two reasons. One is because they're coming and they're reporting a problem to you, and two, your wage is actually based on call targets. Therefore, the more calls you process, the more likely you are to get paid at the end of the day. So, yeah, the first step is gather information from customer.
All right.
Anyway, we're going to be talking all about that today, so and that all comes down into this little umbrella of communication skills. So I'm going to sort of do our normal bit of a lecture, but then Terry and I are going to do some sort of role play scenario for you, so we can give you some options on how you would deal with customers like we will be.
And if anybody would like to be involved in our role play and would like to play one of the roles, and all we ask is that you keep your language at family gathering level, and I'm talking about a good, happy family gathering, not the usual ones we have. We might get a couple of students to either try and be the help desk technician or try and be the other thing. Customer, one of those things.
Yeah, we'll let you know when we'll stop it. No, we just thought rather than just sort of talking, we might do a little bit of, and this is very off the cuff that we're going to do it today, so we haven't prepared anything, so it'll go where it goes, won't it, Kerry?
That's right, and if ever anything goes wrong, I'll just sit there and go, your call is important to us, and you will be answered by the next available technician.
Yes. Oh, don't you love it? Especially when you've been sitting there for half an hour waiting.
Oh, I've got one. I was on the phone for like 20 minutes and on hold, and then all of a sudden the call just drops. And
don't you hate that? That actually happened to me the other day. I've sort of been on there for ages. Oh, no. And then you have to go back and start all over again. It's wonderful, isn't it? All right, so today's all about communication and how you deal with, as a technician, how you deal with your customers. And, you know, the old scenario, the customer's always right, is not always something that's easy to keep uppermost in your thoughts, particularly if you've got somebody who's been quite obnoxious on the other end of the phone. But apart from those obnoxious customers, a lot of your customers are going to be, you know, just your average person, just, you know, Joe Bloggs and his dog and, you know, or Sarah Spears and her, you know, pussycat that's on her lap and ringing up because their computer's crashed and they don't know what to do. So I guess the thing is to treat people basically how you would like to be treated, with a lot of respect and trying to elicit information from them. And that's not always easy because, you know, you've got people there that you say, what's wrong with your computer? Doesn't work. But, well, you know, can you explain a bit more? Doesn't work.
It's broken.
It's broken, yeah. would you like to tell me what happened? It stuffed up about half an hour ago. You know, it can get very, very frustrating for you as the person that's trying to help them on the end of the phone, or even if you're face-to-face with your customer, if they can't explain. So really, it's then up to you to try and use your communication skills to elicit the information from them that you need to get from that customer. And that might be where you're putting them at ease, not making them feel like they're a real dodo just because they can't explain it. Keeping your own language in a way that's down to earth, not using techno-speak, because the majority of people out there aren't going to appreciate you using techno-speak. They're just going to go, huh?
The more you ask, the more they will gradually tell you.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So it's just a matter of taking your time with them and, you know, keeping calm, being very patient, and, you know, being professional about what you're doing. So I think we could probably, you know, determine a few little things as sort of getting to know your customer, being polite, calling them by name, whether they like being called by their first name or their full name. You know, don't use first names until you're sure what they like. Trying to build a rapport between you and them. And also another thing that's probably, that will come across to anybody working with the public, is getting to know what level of computer knowledge they've got. So we could have somebody like Mr. Hoth, who comes in and talks to me about his computer problem, and Mr. Hoth, would you like to tell me what has been happening with your computer today?
Yes, it doesn't work.
Oh, well, Mr. Hoth, how long hasn't it been working for?
Since yesterday. It just stopped.
It just stopped. Can you tell me what happened a little bit before it stopped working? What were you doing at the time?
And now at this point, the average person will actually start becoming helpful. So I will actually start explaining that I was going to this website and I was looking at some stuff, and then the computer stopped working and it hasn't worked since. But obviously, because she's been forthcoming with me and asked me leading questions, which I think will come up in these notes later on, I'm actually forced to provide information. Well, not forced, but I am compelled to provide information.
Now, if we could swing that scenario around now, yes, I used some questions to try and ascertain what actually Kerry was doing at the time, so that can help me to delve further into the problem. But, Kerry, if you'd like to be Mr. Techno-speak now and come in, I'll... now, Mr. Hoth, what was... could you tell me a little bit about what was happening?
Oh, sorry, hang on, I'm being Mr. Technospeak, aren't I?
Yes.
I think what's actually happening is you're experiencing a case of Path MTU discovery, and basically what's happening is the ICMP don't fragment messages are being dropped at the border router, and that's obviously causing your problem, so yeah.
So it's stuff then, eh? Yes, so you can see what we mean. You could have a customer that has little knowledge, or you have a customer with lots of knowledge. Obviously, both can be difficult, because sometimes you might feel your customer knows more than you do. Or as one of our local students here just said, you can also have the customer who thinks they know more than you do. And they can be very difficult to deal with too.
Sometimes customers work up with solutions. They bring you up with solutions, not problems. And sometimes the solution that they've got isn't actually going to fix their problem, but they've already got it worked out. So I don't know why they're calling the help desk, but they think they've got it all sorted. And sometimes they do, and that's good, and sometimes they don't. And one of the tricks is actually to carefully convince them and make it their idea that they perhaps haven't got the problem solved without actually saying so, and get them to work with you on the suggested solution. And as Grace was saying on Wednesday, she told a story about where she was getting all ready and fired up to call the ISP help desk to tell them that their service was down, and actually discovered that the network cable was unplugged, which was probably a good thing that she discovered that before she made the call, because that would have been an interesting one for them to debug at the office.
And it wasn't going to be a very nice call either, because their service had gone down the day before and the day before that, so I was mad.
I think the thing is, too, if you notice, I sat back and I listened to Mr. Hirth talking, and I let him say what he needed to say, but also used leading questions and... just being very respectful, not interrupting, letting them speak, and try and sort of a little bit like pulling needle out of a haystack sometimes, just keeping the flow, the momentum going, but being respectful at all times. Okay, now we could perhaps we'd like to have some of the students doing a bit of a role play here. Perhaps we could pick on Grace, and who else would like to volunteer? Don't everybody jump at once.
We've now got Terra out there in Ventrilo Land.
We have, yeah. Well, you could role play with Terry if you like, Grace. Oh.
Okay. Ah, well, that's right. We'll let you off. Okay.
All right. Well, maybe Grace and Terry would like to do a bit of a role play.
Okay, which one are we doing?
Oh, you can do whatever you like. You can be... Grace, you can be the obnoxious customer.
I can do that.
Okay. Good afternoon, Charter Help Desk. Can I help you?
Yes, your internet's down again. It's been down for 2 days, and this is ridiculous, and I can't believe your internet's down. I mean, this is all... How can you guys have such terrible service? This is just totally awful, and I can't believe you guys suck that much.
I'm very sorry to hear that, ma'am. Could you please tell me a little more about your problem? Okay, so at this point, she's insulted me, and in a normal road rage situation, I'd be jumping out of the car and picking up the tyre lever. But because I'm working on a help desk, I have to remain calm, and I have to listen to her tirade and just be a tree in a forest. But I still have to ascertain what her problem is. Not her problem personally, but her problem with her internet service, obviously. Because if I was to do anything else, that would be very unprofessional. Now, luckily for her, she hasn't abused me yet. She's come pretty close, but she hasn't abused me
yet. That might happen.
Yeah. she hasn't abused me yet, and we'll get to that later on in the course. But essentially, I have asked, could she explain to me a little a little bit more about her internet problem, and that sort of thing. So yeah, look, that's probably a good example on that one.
Don't worry, I really didn't do that to the charter representative that calls.
Glad to hear it. Okay, so yeah, Kerry kept his professionalism, and he listened to her, didn't interrupt her. He actually spoke with a nice tone of voice back to her, didn't become too defensive, and he didn't cut her off either. They're all good things.
He tried.
I almost did, and I actually had to stop myself because I realised that on a good help desk, I'm not supposed to cut you off. I've got to wait for you to at least run out of breath, or at least wait for the pause so that I can actually reply to you. And one of the interesting things is that it becomes very difficult on voice over IP systems, especially when the round trip time is quite high, to actually figure out when the other person has stopped talking, which is sort of the problem we have on Ventrilo here. You do end up talking over the other person, and that can be a bit of a problem.
Yeah. And have you ever had this scenario happen to you? You're talking away to somebody, and you're saying, oh, look, ABC help desk person at the other end. My computer's playing up and suddenly you're on hold. You ever had that happen? They don't say a word. And then you're talking to somebody else because they've just decided to transfer your call without telling you. So that would be another no-no, is not actually putting someone on hold without telling them, transferring their call without telling them. And it does happen, believe me. So... what you should do, if you're actually on the end of the phone, you think this, you're working in network security and the caller is calling you about a hardware problem. You decide that, well, it's more appropriate for the hardware people to look after this call. You say to your customer, look, this problem is not really dealt with in our department. Would you mind if I just transferred your call to Joe Bloggs in the hardware department?
Well, that depends, because sometimes the help desk for network support and the help desk for hardware are two different systems. And whilst you might personally be able to solve their problem, there's no way that you could log it into the right system, and you might actually get your knuckles wrapped. I mean, obviously, if you're a small company or a few employees, you can get away with answering the other questions. Or as long as you actually fill in the necessary documentation so that people have actually got... because whilst fixing the user's calls is important, having the history and the database of problems and solutions is also important.
Yeah, that's right. And also, oftentimes, if you're in one department, you've got to keep answering calls that are related to that, and someone else can be, getting the calls relevant to their department. So, before you transfer that call, you should say to the person on the end of the phone, would you mind if I just put you on hold for 1 second and make it 1 second. I'm going to transfer your call. You'll be talking to Sam in hardware. And then you just put them through to Sam. Sam, I've got a call for you, and put it through.
Have you actually noticed that they actually, now when they do that, they actually have both parties on the line, and you actually hear the help desk person say, Sam, this is Kerry from whatever, and I'm transferring you across because he has a question relating to na-na-na-na-na-na, and they go ahead, Sam, and then Sam picks up the call, and it's all good. They actually make that a very transparent process.
Okay, now, I'm going to do a little bit more of role plays here with Kerry. Kerry, you're going to be the help desk person, and you've got Sabrina here.
Are you the teenage witch, are you?
Something like that. And Sabrina's very talkative, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so ring, 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 ring.
Hello, Fugal Help Desk, can I help you?
Oh, hello, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Look, I've got a problem with my computer, but also, did you know that my grandmother's sick and she needs some assistance to get to the shops? But my computer is doing some funny things, and, you know, also, oh, do you know anyone that could take her to the shops?
Now, your computer as well, could you give me more of an idea of what exactly is wrong with your computer?
Oh, it's going and but Nana's doing that too, so, you know, we're having a bit of a problem. Need to get her down to the shops and, yeah.
Look, I'm very sorry to hear about your grandmother. However, I think that...
And my pussycat's having problems too.
Okay, if we could just return to the computer problem that you mentioned earlier at the beginning of the call, please.
Oh, that boom, boom, boom. Yeah, it's doing that boom, boom, boom sound. Boom, boom, boom. And much the same as what Nana's doing.
Right. And how long has it been going on your computer, Sabrina? How long has this been happening?
Oh, it's about six... about 6 weeks, but Nana's been doing the same for about 6 weeks. She goes vroom, 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 vroom as well, and the computer's doing vroom, 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 but it's been doing it about 6 weeks, and the cat's been sort of playing up as well. Oh, and the dog... and the dog keeps chasing its tail.
Okay, look, if, I realise that... I would ask if we could please concentrate on what the computer is doing, please, Sabrina, because otherwise it may take us a little longer to solve your problem, and I'm very keen to see this problem resolved as soon as possible.
Okay, so what do you think? So what do you think about the computer doing the bomb, bomb, bomb then? do you think it's had the bomb, bomb, bomb?
And as you can see, I'm struggling in this situation because there is quite a high noise to signal ratio.
So Kerry's been very, very calm and very... patient there, but yes, but believe me, you do get customers like that, and you try to get them to the point all the time. I'm sure many people have come across that in their working lives. Yes. So yeah, it's really been very patient, I guess is the word to say. But with somebody who's sort of very talkative and doesn't stay to the point, it can be very difficult. Oh, yes, we are. But I guess this is the way. Instead of us sitting here saying, this is what you do, this is what you do, we can actually just do some nice etiquette-based scenarios for you. So...
Well, I mean, if you prefer not to be having fun, right, the final's running in an hour's time. Everybody get ready.
Yes.
Just kidding.
Okay. So, all right, I think we've sort of played a few of those roles just to give you an idea of, you know, the types of things you might come across. The one we didn't do was the rude customer, but we sort of, we know what it's like. Just keeping patient, calm, and trying to slowly delve into what the problem is, keeping them focused on what the problem is too.
I was pretty rude.
You were rude.
Aww, you could have been ruder.
I would have been able to keep it G-rated.
Right. Has anybody, and I'm not going to expand the acronym, has anybody read any of the BOFH files? And you can go Google up what BOFH is later, and maybe you can have a read. And they are of somebody who absolutely runs a computer help desk in completely the wrong way. And it stands for the something operator from hell. And you can look that up, and it will give you a chuckle and tell you how not to run a help desk. Actually, I think the Register still has a BOFH column on it, www.theregister.co.uk.
Okay.
It's also a good IT news site, so I'm not just handing that out so that they can go and read that column, but it actually has news on the things that... that matter in the computer. And interestingly enough, if you go to the register, their actual catch cry is the register biting the hand that feeds it, except the IT is in uppercase, so it's actually biting the hand that feeds IT, which I thought was a pretty clever pun.
Ah, yes, yeah. Okay, now we've talked about the first phone contact that you might have. Another way that you might be communicating is online. So we have an etiquette. So some general rules for that type of etiquette. I guess, again, is treating the person on the other end as if, hey, you would like to be treated. Knowing about other people's time, not just wasting their time. Another thing that can happen is flame wars. I don't know if anyone's seen any of those happening online.
Yeah, we're on VPL.
Yes. Yeah, flame war is not a good thing. Not respecting other people's privacy.
Look, I'd like to expand on that flame war thing a bit, actually, because it's quite important.
It is important, yeah.
And this is a couple of things that I was told a long time ago. Now, I've been on the internet since 1993. It's quite a long time. You youngins haven't been on for that long. But one of the things one of my friends told me was that I've been told this ever since I was quite young, is when you write something down, it's very permanent. You've written it down, it's in people's inboxes, it's bouncing around in cyberspace, and in fact, if you post to a mailing list that's archived, it's up on Google. And in fact, if you do some Googling for me and look down the bottom of the results, you'll see some entries where I'm actually ripping into people for their lack of knowledge back in late 99. Something I'm not proud of, but it's up on the up on Google, and you can all go look that up and have a chuckle later. That said, one of the things that you should always consider about your email is when you go to write an email and you're absolutely hopping mad and you're just about to go out and do whatever it is you're going to do to this person, stop, write your email, and put it away for an hour or two and come back and reread it and make sure you're still happy with exactly what you said and how you said it. And if you're not sure, put it away for another couple of hours and come back again, because maybe the message needs a rewrite, and you need to be a little more reasonable about how you tell somebody something. The other thing is, if you come back at somebody too caustically and you absolutely tear shreds off them for no reason, they're going to stop listening to you. And they're going to stop reading your messages and they're just going to ignore you. And you don't know what their threshold of not being bothered with you is, so you do have to be a bit careful. But the other thing is, you know, how would you feel if you got a message from somebody that was quite rude and offensive? And there was a work situation some time ago where I did actually receive a message from somebody that was not the most stellar piece of writing that I've ever received, and we actually did actually have to put this particular person on disciplinary action because of that message, because it was very offensive and I mean, I wasn't particularly upset, I was more bemused, but the fact is that the message should never have gone out in the first place. And sometimes we've all got to realise that everybody has different opinions, and everybody has different things that they find important and different things that, you know, make them tick or whatever else. And we always have to keep other people's feelings in mind. Just because it's an email doesn't mean we get to drop our personal interaction etiquette with other people.
And I think that's the thing too. You've really got to be ethical. And if you're not prepared to say it to their face, then don't put it in an email. Not a good idea. The other thing that not everybody knows, I'm sure everybody here does, is that in many of those scenarios, uppercase used in an email is considering that you're shouting at somebody. So not everybody is aware of that, I know.
Also be aware that if you do accidentally do that, You can actually apologise, because there are times if you are using speech you might not know that your caps lock is on. Although,
no, that's right.
Interestingly enough, with JAWS it does actually beep if you have caps lock on and you hold your shift key down and put in an uppercase letter, so that's usually a good indicator. But yes, sighted people do see messages in all caps as shouting, and they actually find them difficult to read.
Any questions or comments so far?
It's all good.
Anyone got any stories or things they'd like to add on any of the stuff we've talked about? Anybody been flamed? I know I have.
Oh yeah.
How do you react to flaming? What's your personal? Do you send back to them or do you let it go?
It depends. Sometimes I'll just get in a notepad and write out what I'd like to say and then go delete it.
Sorry, Grace, can you just repeat that? We had another comment come in. I just couldn't hear you.
Sometimes I'll go into Notepad and write a note. Sorry, my headphones just fell off. Sometimes I'll go in and write a note okay. And then just go ahead and delete it. Or I'll post something on my blog where they can't see it if it really gets to me. Or I'll just delete it and be like, oh, what an idiot.
That's probably the best thing to do, is just not respond if you can, you know. Otherwise, it just becomes like a flame war. So, can be difficult sometimes, though. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Now, another thing that you might come, if you're working in a call centre, you may find that you have time frames on calls. So, you also might find that you have time frames on the length of time you can leave someone in a queue. Not if you work at Centrelink. They can leave you in a queue all day. For those that don't know, that's our social security company here in Australia. So you can end up in the queue for a long, long time. But you might be working in a call centre where you've got, you know, 2 or 3 minutes. Yeah, I know, it's difficult. But you might work somewhere where they've got a 3 or 5 minute time that you can have them in a queue. You might have a minimum number of calls that you have to make per day. You might find that there's you're only allowed 10 minutes actually when you get on the call. So it can be a very stressful type situation to be working in at times. So I guess the things that I would suggest there would be to make sure that when you're starting your day, as you're coming in on time or a little bit early, so you've got time to compose yourself, get ready. If you've got calls coming in, don't go off and just ignore them. The other thing that's very hard, sometimes you get regular customers, and some of them you can really enjoy talking to them. Just be aware of your time management, that sort of thing. Another thing that's very important in all work situations is you might have a customer that rings in to talk to Harry, who's not there today, for example. And Harry's their favourite person, but you don't like Harry. You don't let the customer know that you don't like Harry. You have to just be very professional in the way that you speak. You know, you don't say, oh, Harry's an idiot, I can help you better. Or you've got to back up your colleague as well. So just being aware of general courtesy, I think, would be the important thing there to think of. So just on all of your correspondence that's written, and we're talking about emails here too, they are and can serve as legal documents. So it's very important to be aware that what you write down can and will be used in a court of law against you if it is something that goes to... So bear that in mind. If it ever went to a legal situation, would your email be considered obscene, or would it be considered as defamation of someone? So just be very, very aware of what you write down.
Also, the fact that because it is written down, it is actually permissible evidence. It's very difficult to prove that somebody said something to you unless you have witnesses or a recording of them saying it to you, whereas email, you've basically written it down and you can bring in printouts and you've got mail logs and all sorts of things.
Actually, interestingly enough, Kerry touched on there on recordings, and a lot of conversations these days, they ask your permission, or you've got to opt out if you don't want it recorded. Actually, recording can work to your benefit too, because in a recent techno company asked us about changing our ISP a few months ago, not mentioning any names here, but we decided in the end not to go with the deal that they were offering. We were initially going to, but when they had called us, they'd asked us did we want X service and Y service, and we'd said yes to X service and no to Y service. And a few months later, because this deal fell through, we were getting bills about Y service that we'd actually knocked back in the first place. So they went back and looked at the recording and said, oh yes, you're perfectly correct. You did not want that service and it shouldn't have been being billed for. So recordings can also work in your favour, or, emails can also work in your favour as well. So, just be aware of all those things. They are legally binding and they can get you into all sorts of strife. Yes, Grace.
I have a story. A friend of mine decided to open a home-based business, and he used his girlfriend's credit card. And she said that was totally fine. And then she broke up with him and tried to sue him for credit card debt. And they actually found the recording of her saying that he could use her credit card, and she got in a lot of trouble. So, yeah, it's a super thing to have those recordings.
Yeah, well, that's right. So they can work in your favour or against you, and whatever the case may be. Yeah, good story. Okay. The other thing you might get to when you're talking to different call centres regarding IT problems, you can get different levels of technicians. You can get your level one or your entry level one, and that person's generally going to handle all of the lower level calls, and then you can get the higher level technician who's generally more experienced on a higher salary. And if the level one technician is unsure, then they'll usually transfer that call up to the level two technician who'll take the call then. Now, if you're a level one technician and you get a call that you feel is out of your depth, then I guess it's never too hard to sort of think, well, okay, it is out of my depth. Don't be too frightened to bump it up the chain if you need to. Okay, so I guess really today's, we're sort of just about at the end of the lecture actually, but the message I'd like to get to you today is just good communication skills are so very important. You can get around a lot of problems if you've got good communication skills. You can find out what's going on. Not always easy to be patient, but it's a skill that is very important. Particularly, if you're working for a company, but also if you're running your own company, is the old scenario, the customer's always right, is probably a good scenario to have. Remembering that, yes, Suman.
Yeah, and what if the technician's voice is not audible to the customer time and time again? How should the technician react for that?
Yeah, we get lots. Well, to be honest with you, and I'm going to be straight down the line with you, we get lots of calls from your area of the world where that's exactly the problem, and nothing to do with you personally, but we get a lot of telemarketing companies and stuff that ring us up and you cannot understand a word they're saying. Inaudible, and also difficult to pick the words out. And what you have to do then is you have to be very nice about it, but you have to say, I'm very sorry, I can't understand... what you're saying to, could you could you please you know, repeat your request? And then if you still can't understand the person, you basically have to apologize and say, I'm terribly sorry, perhaps you could call back when you have a better phone line, and but be courteous to them, and then if necessary terminate the call. So it's a problem wherever you are. If you have a bad call quality or bad voice quality, you still have to be nice to the person at the other end, because you don't know how well they can hear you. If they can hear you fine, you can't be rude to them.
And as Scott just mentioned, they could be calling on Skype or VoIP too. And they often are, but yeah, I guess it's just a matter of take a deep breath and just okay, Jenny. Good luck. yeah, it's trying to just keep that. Well, okay, I can't hear them, but I'll just have to explain that to them and hope they understand. You know, but keeping you cool, not a lot you can do really. Any other question there? No? Okay. All right. So just really we've talked about communicating today, and really it's just having an open dialogue. You're going to get a lot more out of your customers and a lot more information if you are keeping your cool and, you know, just working through things. Okay. Before we wind up, I'll just have a little bit of a quiz, which also will... have some sort of answers that will verify what we've been talking about. So, chat window's open. What is a good rule for a call centre technician to follow? A, being proactive by avoiding speaking when upset or angry to customers, with upset or angry customers, I should say. B, consider each new customer call as a fresh start. C, follow that first impression of the customer and use netiquette. D, focus on how to repair the problem while the customer is speaking. Yeah, that was pretty unanimous. Yes, each call is a new call and a fresh start. Yeah, even if you've had a bad customer before who's been abusive to you, just take a deep breath and think, all right, well, this next one might be very, very nice. The other thing I try to keep in mind, from a personal perspective, is sometimes you don't know what's going on in someone's life either. They might have had a really bad day and something terrible's happened, and you're just going to make it worse if you're rude back to them. So just another little tip there. Okay, question two, which two actions are examples of good netiquette? Okay, that's A, avoid beginning an email with a formal greeting when it is a reply. B, help keep flame wars only for humanistic reasons. C, check grammar and spelling before sending an email. D, use mixed case in an email instead of all uppercase or lowercase. Or E, reply to flames but not via email. Choose two of those.
C and D.
Yeah, C and D. Okay, so do a spell check and grammar check before you send your email. And D, use mixed case in an email instead of all upper or lower. Okay, something that we didn't come up with on this particular module, but we'll see how we go. What is an SLA? Is it A, an itemized record detailing all levels of service performed on equipment covered by a manufacturer warranty? B, legal agreement between a customer and a service technician confirming specific services performed on equipment not covered by warranty. C, legal agreement between a customer and the service vendor confirming a specific level of support. That's correct, it is. It's a legal agreement between the customer and the service vendor confirming a specific level of support. Okay, next question. What is the primary responsibility of a level one technician? Is it A, determining the cause of a complex computer problems? B, gathering information from the customer? C, using remote diagnostic software to connect to the customer computer? Or D, resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer. Yeah, everybody's got that right. Yeah, B. Yeah, they're finding out what the problems are, deciding whether they can handle it, and and deciding whether it goes up the chain. Okay, which task would be the responsibility of a level 2 technician? Is it A, resolving computer problems that are limited to software errors? B, gathering information from the customer? C, directing the customer to the appropriate computer vendor for help? Or D, resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer? An interesting answer they've got here. I can see why people are choosing different answers here. The actual answer they've got is resolving computer problems that require opening up the computer. Well, how would you feel about that, Kerry?
I would have said the one with the opening up the computer, because that's a second level technician job.
Okay. It could be a combination answer, though, that one, I would have thought.
I thought it was just solving more complex computer problems than
technician.
So it could have been A or D.
Yeah. Yeah, that's how I took it too, Grace. That the answer there is D. So the Cisco answer is D. Yeah, I would have thought so too. So, but I guess if you get that one in the exam or something similar, D will be your answer. Okay. Which two skills, so we want two answers here, are most important for a successful computer technician to possess? Is it A, communication, B, computer repair skills, C, task maintenance, D, work escalation?
B, because he isn't a pizza guy.
Yeah, A and B is correct, yeah. Communication skills and computer repair skills. Gee, if they haven't got computer repair skills and they're a computer technician, we're in problems, eh? Okay. Question 7. What is the proper way to conduct a telephone call to troubleshoot a computer problem? Is it A, always gather information from the customer and escalate the problem? B, maintain professional behaviour at all times? C, ask personal questions to get better acquainted with the customer? Or D, explain each step to help the customer understand the troubleshooting process?
Yeah, so you pick up the help desk, and if the girl that's called you up sounds cute, you go, "What are you wearing?"
That's right. Or if it's Brad Pitt on the end of the phone, you go, "Oh, hi, Brad."
Yeah, you go, "I'll fix whatever you want."
B is maintaining professional behaviour at all times. Okay. Next question, a user calls to report that a new computer is broken. The technician determines that the user is inexperienced and possesses a limited understanding of computer technology. How should the technician handle this call? Okay, should they A, write up a brief trouble ticket and send a technician to the customer to resolve the computer problem? B, attempt to gather information using simple step-by-step process to determine the problem? C, explain technical terms to the customer to educate them so that they can describe the problem? Or D, direct the user to several websites to help them identify the problem? Yeah, you're correct. Attempt to gather information using a simple step-by-step process to help you determine the problem. And our last question for today. A customer calls asking for help with an error code displayed on a computer running Linux. Oh, here's an interesting one. The technician has limited experience with Linux. What should the technician do? A, attempt the repair anyway. B, apologise and advise the customer that the technician hopes to receive training for Linux in the future. C, gather information about the problem and escalate the call to a level 2 technician. Or D, direct the customer to the website of the manufacturer.
Or E, email Kerry.
Yeah, you're all correct, it is C.
Yeah,
that's right.
Because
so
well,
yeah,
even if
that's where you escalate.
Even if the technician is going to undergo treatment training for Linux, and then they say, "I'm very sorry, but I'm going to train in Linux next week," that is not the customer's problem. So don't tell a story.
That's it. All right. So next week, and we will be skipping some in the next few weeks. A couple of modules. I think we've said the advanced scanners and the printers, and there's another one as well. But next week we've got advanced PCs, so we'll be talking a little bit more. I will have a look into that and double check, because I'm not sure. I think that might be covering the bench technician, which we won't follow. So I'll just have to have a look at that, and I'll let you know. But at this stage, it will be on advanced PCs, but I will be looking into that. Otherwise, I'll be replacing it with another one.
Did we do... We did the new curriculum last year too, didn't we?
Yeah.
You can always go and have a look back at the audio in 2007 folder once I fix the web server, and you'll be able to tell which model
we went to. Yeah. But, I think this might be the one with the bench technician stuff in it. I'll have a look at that shortly and let you know. Okay, so any questions before we stop recording? Okay.
In case all of you students think that you can actually get out of work today because our website's down, I've got a backup mirror. I've just typed the URL in the chat, so that doesn't mean you're going to get out of
here.
Oh, well, I was going to do an exam today, but the QCAT site's down. No, we've got a backup mirror, so I'll just put that into chat now. So anybody who is thinking of doing exams and stuff, you won't have to miss out on your diagram descriptions or anything. It's all still out there.
Okay, thanks everyone. We can... Yes, Sermon.
Yeah, what if my three atoms are over? I mean, that particular module will be cancelled for me? And how many modules can I fail?
You can't fail any modules. You need to at least clear 75% on all of the module exams. However, there are modules that we will not... There are elective modules between 11 and 16, and we don't do all of those elective modules, and we will tell you which ones that we're not doing.
Yeah, I'll have a look at that today, and I'll just work out which ones we're not doing, and I'll post it to the list so that you know.
Modules 1 through 10 are core
like
competency.
Like, what if I get less than 75 in some of the modules, I will be disqualified for the certification program?
No, you'll be made to do the test again until you pass.
After my three atoms?
Yes, we'll have a special exception for you.
Oh, thank you. That's fantastic.
We're
nice people.
What I would strongly recommend you do, though, is rather than taking the three attempts straight up one after the other, actually take sufficient time and review the module properly. We need to see your answers in before the end of the course. It's not critical that we have the answers in within a week or so, and we'd rather you take the time to absorb the information rather than using the three attempts straight up. So do take some time to actually go back and read those modules.
Yes, Rohit.
I have a confusion, little bit confusion. I'm doing this course from NAB, and when I ask our coordinator, Mr. Anubhav Mitra, about sending modules and labs, so he's saying that you have to send the labs and modules to me. It means that to Mr. Anubhav Mitra. So I'm confused that what should I do? Should I send to him or directly to Kavi instructors?
Yes, you had something to add, Satish?
Yes, Kavi, I have a question here.
Let me answer the first question we've got outstanding. Because if your question is a different one, unless you have information to contribute to Rohit's question, I'll answer his question first. Theoretically, what is supposed to be happening is your local instructors are supposed to be marking your labs. You should send them to the local instructors. As a backup, you can CC them to CAVI instructors. So you can send them to both people, but you should actually primarily send your labs to the local instructors, and they should mark the labs, and then they should send us the marks for your labs. So yes, they should be sent to your local academies, because you do actually have instructors over there that are supposed to be marking your labs to reduce the marking load on us.
Yeah, that's correct. So if you can send them to your local one, that is good.
Can you write down this answer in chat window, please? Because of some kind of connection problem, I'm not able to hear you correctly.
Yeah, one sec.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Now, you had a question, Satish, sorry.
Satish, yeah.
As few weeks back, one of my friends has given me a call and asked for some help regarding this OS. When the workstation is switched on, I find that the screen is completely blank after the Windows XP graphic. I'm able to see the mouse on the screen, but the screen is completely black.
Boot the machine into safe mode and check the screen resolution. He's probably set a screen resolution that is too high for his monitor. You will have to repair that in safe mode. No speech is available in safe mode. You'll need to get sighted help.
Okay.
Otherwise, you can launch Windows Narrator, and if you can actually log into the machine, like if the startup sound plays but the screen is blank, you can actually log in and use Windows Narrator to drop the screen resolution down in Control Panel, and maybe that will bring his display back.
We like the labs to come in as you go, preferably. You know, as you're doing them, just send them in. We do like to have them within a month of each module, if possible. Because otherwise what happens, we end up with 15 modules or so of labs and worksheets for the course all at once, and your instructor starts going, because there's a lot of marking. So if you can do that, and the thing is that they can come in towards the end of the course, but you... you won't get marked off as finished until they are all in.
Also, the course does officially run until the end of the year. So if you have a good explanation and a good reason why your labs have been delayed, yes, you can put them off, and maybe you have been busy. But if we find that you've just been procrastinating, we're not going to cut you too much slack. I mean, there are people who are genuinely busy and genuinely occupied with things, but we shouldn't have to mark. I shouldn't be back here on the 18th of December while everybody else is partying down at the pub, like I was last year, marking the people's labs who decided they were submitting them on the very last day. I would have preferred to have been at the pub, and officially I had actually finished work, but I actually had to work back an extra day. And that's the sort of thing we're trying to avoid. So if you have genuine reasons why your labs are delayed, say health reasons or work has honestly kept you busy, that's fine, we'll cut you some latitude. But if you just decided you wanted to go out and brush the dog, then sorry, we don't have any sympathy for you.
The dog might love you, but we won't.
See, the problem
has
is...
Has recording been stopped?
No, and I don't mind that. I'll stop it in a second. I would just like to point out that we are quite willing to be flexible. We are quite willing to give you as much time as you need, and we understand that there will be things that will cause people to be able to... not submit their labs on time. And you don't have to give us all the details. If something personal has happened in your life that has caused you some distress or some grief or something, you just have to say, look, I've got personal problems and I need a little bit of extra time to complete the labs, or my work has kept me busy and I need a little time to submit the labs. And I'm not having a go at anybody in particular here when I say this, but we're not going to cut you slack if you're just being lazy. And I'm not saying anybody is being lazy, because you are working very well, but it's just easier to go, oh, I'll do those labs next week, and then I'll do those labs the week after, and yeah, I'll get to do those labs, and I've got until December to do those labs, so I won't worry. And then on December 10, you'll be looking at it going, oh dear, I've got, you know, 15 modules worth of labs, and I haven't even started. We know there's a lot of work in these courses, but if you chip away at it throughout the year, you will actually get the labs done. So yes, we can give you extra time to do the labs, Scott, and we realise that you are busy, and that goes for anyone, but honestly, if you can chip away and get the labs done, it'll be less work you have to do later, and once it's done, you can go outside and brush the dog and do whatever you want to do without the thought of these labs hanging over your head. So I think that's probably...
Sorry, Kerry. The other thing is that the labs reinforce what you learn in the notes. They make it all make a lot more sense. So, you know, do try and do them as you go. It's much better.
Suman, you can listen to the recordings and post any of your questions to the mailing lists, as we've always said since the beginning of the year. Every lecture is up on the website.
But still, it's not so interactive.
We understand that, but this is a distance course, and the notes say everything that we do. We can't get into the building. They won't let us in. The alarm systems are active. We can't come on any earlier. Unless anybody else has another solution, and we'd be happy to get an email from anybody who has another solution as to a more suitable time when we could run the lectures, and perhaps we could run a session in the evening or something. I don't know. I mean, we're open to options. What would people be able to do? Have a think about it and email us.
If anyone has any nice, rich friends who want to sponsor Kerry and I to come to India and run an intensive course, we don't mind.
Absolutely. But in all seriousness, we understand that you miss out on the interactivity, and we understand that it's a lot harder doing it in isolation because it is a distance course, and we don't like that either. But the problem is that... we can't actually get into this building before 8 o'clock, and the actual remote students who come into this building are not allowed in until 8:30. And by the time we get all set up and ready to go, it is 9 o'clock. So I would encourage you to do as much as you can with the recorded lectures until we get this resolved to a better situation, and use the mailing list. I don't see any of you posting to the mailing lists. Nobody's posted any questions to the mailing lists. If you look at the Cavi Discuss archives, they're dead. This is a resource for you guys. And the good thing about posting to the mailing list is if you ask a question on the mailing list, you're going to get a documented response that you can save on your computer for later. So whilst we are going to work on getting you guys more interactive and back into the courses and being able to ask your questions in real time, please use the other resources that are available to you. We've got students that are 12 hours out of time zone doing this course, and they're far worse off than you guys are, and they have done it from the recorded lectures and things. And while you're listening to the recorded lecture, write down the questions that you have. And if they're not answered by the questions, by the end of the lecture, fire them off to us and we'll do our best to answer them.
The other thing to keep in mind is that we are available to talk to you throughout the day. You know, we're on Skype. Also, if you want us to jump on at a reasonable time, send us an email and we will jump on and talk to you as well.
Does that answer your question?
Before we stop recording, too, I will just say, too, you're welcome. We will not be doing Module 11. I've just had
I'm Suresh from India. Just I want to ask a question here.
Yep.
These recordings which are available on the website, can we get this in these modules or anything in text format?
No, that's your notes.
Okay, so only the way is to... we have to listen to these audios.
Look, to be honest with you, mate, we took these module notes from the notes. Like, whatever we say to you comes from the notes that you are given on the website. So, no, we're not going to give you text transcriptions of the what we actually say in the lectures, because we don't have the time to write them out. We'd actually have to sit down and text transcribe everything out. But all of the module information that we give you in the recorded lectures on the website come from the notes that you should already be reading. And if you are already reading the notes, that's exactly where our lectures come from. So when I do a discovery, and as Geraldine will tell you as well, when we do a discovery lecture or an ITE lecture, we open up the notes that you are reading. It's the same notes that you are reading, and we actually take our notes from the curriculum that you are reading, and we make our notes, and that is how we deliver our lecture. So we are all using the same source material, which are the notes for ICU.
Where these notes are available, actually?
You haven't been reading the notes. Okay. Let me... There's a new student document on the QCAT website, and it should have links to the various curriculums on www.qcat.org. And yes, I know that web server is broken. It'll be fixed in an hour or so when I get off lecture. There are notes for each chapter, and I was under the impression that all students were reading the notes, and they are text files for each chapter.
Notes are available for Discovery as well?
Yeah, there is text. If you go to Student Resources on the QCAT website and you click on the ITE1 area, yep, and you then go down to, I'm just trying to remember the exact folder because I don't have the mirror side in front of me. I have to go down onto my home mirror and find it. All of the chapters are actually in text files. We're certainly going to help you find these because they're a very important resource that you need. We really did encourage you guys to explore the QCAT site very early in the year and actually look at both the curriculums, which are inaccessible. I don't step back from that. The curriculum for ITE1 is inaccessible, but the curriculum for Discovery is accessible. Has everybody been looking at the curriculum for Discovery?
So the curriculum for Discovery is also available. The notes for Discovery is available.
Yes.
Yeah, everything is up on that QCAT site, and you really need to be looking at that site. As Kerry mentioned, all of our lectures are based on we don't read word for word, but we pick out what's the most important factors that we see in the lecture, and we bring that into focus for you.
We're a bit shocked here. We thought we had made it very clear that there were notes, and there has always been notes and curriculum. These lectures are not the only resource that you guys should be referring to. In fact, these lectures are only supposed to be an adjunct to the actual written curriculum, or in other words, a little add-on to the written curriculum to help you to understand it. So I wouldn't be too hard on yourself, Sue, and the reason you're not doing as well as you think you are with the tests is you're not actually reading all of the information, so nobody can hardly blame you for that if you haven't actually gone and read the curriculum. So we've really got to get you onto those curriculums, and that will give you a lot more information, because we do gloss over things because we were assuming that you were all reading the curriculums on the website, and we apologise for that. Okay, I've typed in the backup mirror URL into... I have typed in the backup URL for the mirror that's online that you'll be able to get the information from until the real web server is fixed. That is my home internet connection, so it will be a little bit slow, and I will post that to the mailing lists. But we've got to make sure that all of you guys get back onto those curriculums and get those notes. The ITE1 notes are in text format, and the Discovery 1... curriculum is a website, so you will have to do that one online, but the ITE1 notes are all in text files and they're all easily downloadable, and you guys can put them onto whatever devices you have and you can read through those text files, and you'll probably find that the course becomes a lot easier. Now, at the top of the QCAT website, if you go to www.qcat.org and you click on Student Resources, there is a document right up the top called Information for New Students. And I'm really serious about this, guys. I want everybody to read that in the next day or two. It's really important because it points you at all the resources that you should be accessing and should have been accessing since the beginning of semester.
There is so much there, isn't there, Kerry, for you?
Oh, there's bucket loads. There's stacks and stacks and stacks. All the labs are out in text files, and all of the and we had no idea that people weren't actually hitting these resources. But yeah, www.qcat.org, or at the moment qcat.gots.net because QCAT is currently down. And go to Student Resources and really have a poke around there, because there's a gold mine, and you guys haven't quite hit the mother load yet. So I'd really encourage people to go and look at that in the next few days, and get all of the notes that they're going to need, and it's going to make it far easier for you to study. That said, you're all doing exceedingly well without the notes, so we're very proud of you all. And if you can do that well just on our lectures, we must be doing a reasonable job, but we'd like to make it even easier for you guys. Oh, good. And I think Grace is using the notes too.
Oh, yeah. Because I did that lecture, and I had to get all my lecture stuff out of there. So, yeah, notes really, really, really good.
Well, you better be. You really want to get on top of that. I don't know. Maybe we just didn't communicate that clearly. Yeah, no, that's cool. But you should be using the notes as well. The notes are very important. In fact, our lectures are based on those notes, and you should have read those notes. They're very important to read those notes, and that is the curriculum. So see if you can go and find them in the student resources section. There are links to the curriculums, and I know that the ITE1 curriculum is inaccessible. You don't want that. You want the links to the actual ITE1 resources, not the curriculum, but you can actually view the the Discovery 1 curriculums, and I'm pretty sure I've been through the passwords for that, but I will type the passwords for the Discovery 1 curriculum into chat so that you all have them, and you can pull that stuff off qcat.gots.net. You can also view your curriculum from cisco.netacad.net, which is where you do your exams. You can actually pull the Discovery 1 curriculum from there. And if you have checked the box that says, I want accessible content, it will give you the diagram descriptions and stuff all off cisco.netacad.net.
That's the other thing, too. All of the diagram descriptions for your exams are on QCAD as well. So,
Oh, yes, that's right. Here's the username.
And also, I'm having one more query.
Yeah, just one sec.
Okay.
That is the username and password for the Discovery 1 curriculum on the QCAT website. You will need that. Okay, the person with one more question, go for it. Yes, the ITE1 stuff is all in text files. It certainly is. And you can pull all that down. We cannot promise you everything in text files. We're very sorry about that. We had to do the ITE1 in text files, but we feel that the Discovery 1 curriculum is readable on its website presentation, and if it's not, we need to hear from you why it isn't and exactly why it isn't. And yes, sorry, now you can continue.
When I logged into my account, I was able to see Discovery 2 because I completed Discovery 1. I was not getting this IT1 link there, so...
Okay, email cavinstructors@gots.net, email me your Academy username, and I'll look into it for you.
Definitely, sir.
Also, anybody who has finished one course is eligible to join up to what we call the alumni. And if you join up to the alumni, and I'd strongly recommend you do if you have completed one of the courses, it will give you indefinite access to all of the courses you have previously studied. And believe me, that is something you want. Because you might come back in 3 years and want to look something up on the Academy, and if you're in that alumni, you're able to do that. And it is free. It doesn't cost any money.
Okay, sir.
Yes, Suman.
In the ITE section, talking about module test, 9 is there, 10 is there, and both together, 9 and 10 is there. What is that?
It's a combination of what you've done in module 9 and 10. Now, we will have to get back to you on this because I don't intend doing module 10. That's incorrect, I'm sorry. 9 and 10. We have done, 10 was today, so when you get to module 9 and 10, it's just a combination of the two modules together. It's chapter 11 we are going to miss, because it's bench technician.
So, I can skip either 9, or I can skip either 10, or I can do 9 and 10 and skip 9 and 10?
No, you need to do module 9 test, module 10 test, and then the module 9-10.
You must complete every test up to module 10, no exceptions. All tests up to including module 10, they are compulsory. We cannot let you out of any of those.
And yes, whoever asked just then, it was chapter 11, module 11, we will not be doing Module 11. It is benchtop technician work. Oh, well, that's good.
Now, the other thing to keep in mind, guys, is don't panic. And I can see some of you might be a little bit panicky now that you've found out there's all sorts of resources that you didn't know existed. We still have about 6 to 8 weeks to go, okay? So don't panic. There is still time. In fact, we've pushed you through the modules a little bit faster than we possibly should have. And we will be having some. We will be doing some revision, but let me tell you, first and foremost, right now, you guys had better decide which bits of discovery are going to be revision, because I am not going over the whole course again. So you've really got to pick out the things you're having trouble with, and we will focus on what you would like to revise in discovery. Yep, no, I saw that. That's fine. But you can you can email that to cavi-instructors@gots.net, because I have the memory of an amnesia-ridden goldfish, okay? So email it to me so that I know which modules you would like to revise. cavi-instructors@gots.net, and that website is written all over the QCAT website, so you should be able to find it easily enough under student resources.
When we are going to have Thursday chats on Windows 7?
We're not. In the short term. This is not a Microsoft course, and Microsoft will not provide us with information on their products and services without charging us lots of money. So we will not be covering Windows 7 at this time, because we don't know anything about it. I'm sorry about that. We will be downloading and testing the release candidates and the final builds, but we don't actually know anything about Windows 7. Yeah, I know the release candidate's out, but I don't particularly feel like blowing up my computer at this point. So basically, I'm not going to touch Windows 7 for at least another 1 to 3 months. I'll let you early adopters turn your computers inside out and learn from all of your mistakes, and then I'll jump in about 2 or 3 months and have a look at it. So we're not planning to do stuff on Windows 7 in the short term. I have never run a copy of Vista for long term on my computers, and I have no intention of doing so. So that gives you some idea as to how unwilling I am to adopt new technologies until they're proven. And in Vista's case, I think I was probably well justified in waiting as long as I did. And that's how I personally feel. Anybody else who has and does run Vista, that is your choice, and we wouldn't certainly get in the way of your operating system choice. I personally... Yeah, exactly. I personally don't use Vista, and whilst I know a little bit about it, I do tend to steer clear of it. But no, sorry, no Windows 7 information. I would say that you will find the blogosphere absolutely teeming with information about Windows 7 in the next 3 to 4 weeks. So start hitting sites like, TechTarget has usually got some good articles, and also keep an eye on Blind Cool Tech, because there'll be some blind people podcasting about Windows 7 and stuff. And then once all of the hullabaloo has died down, we'll go and take a look at it and see if we can bring you any concentrated nuggets of information. No, we haven't done a chat on the Orca screen reader. I might see how we go with that. We did one on Ubuntu last year. There was one in 2008 on Ubuntu 8.10, and I believe Elise covered some Orca stuff then. But if you really want to play with Orca, I'd recommend you downloading a copy of Vinix, V-I-N-U-X, www.vinix.org.uk, and booting that up on the live CD and having a play with it before you decide you want to go any further with Orca.
And I have a question, like NetEcad, Cisco NetEcad site is only for visually impaired, that same for everyone sighted?
That site is for everyone. There is one checkbox that says provide material in accessible format, and if you check that box, that gives it special things for the vision impaired, but every student, thousands and thousands of them, use that cisco.netacad.net site. That is for everyone.
So the exams what we take is same for sighted?
Yes, it is.
Exactly the same.
The only site that is specifically for you guys is www.qcat.org, the student resources section.
That's awesome.
We would be very interested to hear your opinion when you do check it, because we think it's a pretty darn good site.
And now, if you don't think it is a darn good site, we would encourage you to constructively put in your suggestions and send them to CAVI instructors. Be nice, because some of the people who work on this site are volunteers and we like to keep them happy. But if you genuinely find problems with the QCAT website, or there are things that you would really like to see changed, please email a constructive email to caviinstructors@gots.net. We do listen, we do change things, and we would be happy to hear from you if you do have any problems, issues or concerns. That site is there for you. It's not there for us. It's for you. So really, really look at that and have a poke around. As I said, you'll have to use the mirror for the next few hours, qcat.gots.net. I will be bringing the www.qcat.net site back online very soon. In fact, I'm tempted to redirect the A record to gots.net. I'll look at that.
Well, the other thing is, you'll even find Daisy books on there.
Oh, yeah, there's a library of Daisy books, except that's down at the moment. You won't find them on my server. But on www.qcat.org/library, there's actually a whole library of about 4,000 free Daisy books.
So have fun.
There is any way out to work around with asterisk server? Asterisk?
Asterisk?
Yeah, the SIP phone.
Yeah, but that's not a topic for this particular discussion, because this is ITE, but PBX in a flash, go get it and install it and use it. That's what I use. It rocks. It's got a web interface. It's really cool. It's accessible. It's good. Which is www.pbxinaflash.net. You may need some initial sighted help to load it on, either to your machine or to your virtual machine, but you might want to go and have a poke around that site, and we might give a Thursday chat on that at some point. All right, have a good week, guys, and
yes,
please use the mailing lists. Please, if you have any questions, email CAVI instructors, and I will be posting the URL to the backup mirror to the announce list, so most of you should get it. And if some of you don't get it, then please share that URL around so that you've all got it, and really have a poke around that site. You will do yourselves the biggest favour.
And enjoy the site. You will. And thank you all for your attention today, and we will. You have a nice weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.